Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Also available on the 101.3 ESPN app and on your Amazon Echo, so you can always ask Alexa to stream WCPV or to play 101.3 ESPN. So all kinds of different ways to find us and all different kind of ways to get in. 802-655-6672. You can do that on the Town Fair Tire text line. So one more one more day's worth of Red Sox ticket giveaways. That's tomorrow in the huddle. So remember, Golika Wingo word of the day tomorrow. You'll hear it at 7:55 and 8:55, and we'll call for it at 4:20 and 5:20, trying to get you tickets to see the Sox in April. Trivia tomorrow at the Burger Bar in Colchester, and you know it, right? Pretty much right next to St. Michael's, directly next to Dunkin' Donuts and across from Fannie Allen. So if you're a St. Mike student, we had a lot of you there last week. If you're a townsperson, we had a lot of you there last week. If you're from out of town, we had some of you there last week. So come on and hang out 7:30 to 9:30. Tons of prizes from our friends over at the Burger Bar. So that will be a lot of fun. We do that every Tuesday. I had a bit of an embarrassing moment I have to cop to yesterday, but I know I'm not the only one who's done this. If you have ever had reason to think that you wanted to become a broadcaster, or if you had reason to think that you just wanted to have some fun, you've probably done this, but it was an embarrassing moment for me last night. So I was playing video games last night, and I don't get to play video games very often. I choose at this point in my life to not spend a lot of my free time playing video games, but I played yesterday, and I haven't played in a while, well, a couple of weeks. I mean, I probably play video games about two or three times a month, and I only ever play one game. MLB The Show, PS3, still the 2016 version. So it's been a bit. So, and I don't need to upgrade because I don't get to play that much. So I'm playing last night, and I'm playing as the Mariners, and I'm taking on the Pirates. And I muted the game, as I always do. I generally mute the game because I'm usually listening to music or listening to a radio show or listening to a podcast, something other than listening to the in-game commentary. But I catch myself, as I always do, and I've always done this for my whole life, muting the game and then doing the play-by-play myself. So I'm playing the video game, and here I am saying, well, and I'm using the video game stats that are appearing on the screen. Well, Cano, he's hitting 7 of his last 8 games, and he's hitting .429 in that stretch, and Cano leads the American League with 36 home runs and 72 RBIs or so, and I was doing that, and Jess walks by me. She walks out of the kitchen and goes, what is going on in here? What is this talking? And I go, yeah, I'm just broadcasting the game. And she looks at me like I have 3 heads. But I have done that my whole life. So 802-655-6672. I have always, whenever I play a video game, because for a long time I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. So, and I stupidly thought I was more interesting than at one point maybe I was. But when the play-by-play guys in the video games were very bad, maybe me talking was more interesting. Now they're so good that that's definitely not the case. But I had delusions of grandeur of being a play-by-play guy at one point. And then I realized being a talk show host, in my mind, was a lot more fun. So I've always muted games and just done the broadcast. And I know people that have muted games on TV, you know, muted the Red Sox, muted the Yankees, and done play-by-play, and that's how they've gotten their play-by-play better. I know umpires that will mute a game and call the game themselves to get into the rhythm of calling strikes and out and safe calls. So I know I'm not the only one who has done this, but somebody else out there has done this too. 802-655-6672. Jordan in Fairfield, I think we've got a nerd alert. Well, that's probably true. It's probably a lot less nerdy at 14 than it is at 28, but it's just always been something that I've done. So, yeah, so that I was caught. announcing my own video game yesterday. So that was embarrassing, but I had to share it with you. As for what's coming up on the show today, more on Gronk and Belichick's feud, more on the Giants and their offseason program, some notes on Shohei Ohtani of the Angels, and then at 6:40, Chris Taylor, Plattsburgh men's soccer coach, will join us. Just got that job. Congratulations to Chris, a Plattsburgh alum, coming back home. So he'll join us at 6:40. But first, I usually don't think that early season baseball matchups matter. The results of the games matter, but look, if you go, if the Red Sox get swept by the Yankees, I'll still look at them usually and say, well, hey, they're 8-4 through 12 games. We take that. Usually I would say that. In this case, I'm not going to say that. This Red Sox-Yankees series, which starts tomorrow, of which we'll have all three games on this station, it matters. And it actually matters in a big way. And again, I usually don't think that. This is an outlier on thinking that these three individual games matter. But the reason why is because this is different. This is finally a true litmus test for the Red Sox, who have played bad baseball teams for the first nine games. And that's okay. The Red Sox did exactly what I said I wanted them to do. They did exactly what I said they needed to do, and they did it better than I thought that they needed to do. They have took advantage, they have taken advantage to this point, of a bad schedule. They have played the Rays now seven times and the Marlins twice, and they project to be two of the worst teams in baseball, and in the Marlins' case, maybe one of the worst teams in individual baseball history in a single season. That's how bad the Marlins are projected to be. And the Red Sox mowed through them and went 8-1. They needed to put up big numbers against them. But this is a true litmus test of where they're going to see a team that's playoff caliber, of a team with a lot of expectations, of a team with the reigning rookie of the year, of a team with the reigning National League MVP, of a team with one of the most underrated players in baseball in Didi Gregorius. They're going to see Luis Severino, one of the top starters in the AL. They're going to see Masahiro Tanaka, you know, a top 20 starter in the American League in all likelihood. So they are getting a true litmus test. And if we think the Red Sox are as good as their 8-1 record indicates, then now's a chance for them to prove it. It's also a continued chance to gain separation from the Yankees early. And I know people will say, Brady, it doesn't matter because it is so early. And I get that. I am usually with you also. But I predicted the Yankees would win the American League East. Most people predicted the Yankees would win the American League East. And now the Red Sox are already 3.5 games up. If you get to 5.5, if you get to 6, those are numbers that are, those are big numbers. And that's a big number whether it's April 10th, April 15th, or August 15th. Okay, because 6 becomes 8, and 8 becomes 10, and 10 becomes 13. And then that becomes very, very difficult. I'm all for the Red Sox putting as much separation between themselves and the Yankees as possible. And I don't care if that series concludes on April 13th or on August 13th. Any way that you can do that helps you later in the season. And for a team that most people will argue is still not as good as the Yankees, giving yourself a 5.5, 6.5 game lead on the pinstripes at any point in the season, it's unexpected, and it's highly desirable. We also get a chance to see Chris Sale and Luis Severino go at each other in this series. We get a chance to see David Price pitch in this series. So for both teams, we're getting a look at their aces. There is no qualifier that says, well, the Red Sox won 2 out of 3, but their best pitchers were going up against 4 and 5 for the Yankees. Or, you know, the Yankees won 2 of 3, but they avoided Sale and Price. Nope, you're seeing the aces here. And when the aces are involved, then it becomes an even bigger litmus test, and then it becomes even more important. I am all for seeing it. This Red Sox-Yankees series is early, and usually it doesn't have meaning this early. But this series does. And it's a chance for a number of different things to be seen or be learned about. 802-655-6672 if you want to get in. How does Giancarlo Stanton do on the really big stage? Look, he went, I think, 3-for-26 this past week. He struck out 16 times this past week. That will all be forgotten if he hits 500 in this series with 3 homers. Yankee fans will forget that. How does Giancarlo Stanton do in his first test against Boston? They didn't get Giancarlo Stanton to homer against the Rays. They got him to pound the Red Sox into submission. How does he do at that in his first opportunity? What about the Yankees bullpen? Yankees bullpen, I said it, best in the American League. And I'm not afraid to stand by that still. But the Yankees have five losses. Their bullpen has had a hand in every single loss. How do they do in a playoff-type atmosphere on the road? Okay, is it a bullpen that needed a jump start and playing against the Red Sox is that jump start, or is it a bullpen that's been overrated and overvalued all offseason? It's a chance for the Yankees bullpen to try to correct itself and try to rectify itself. I want to see what the Red Sox do without Xander Bogaerts. How does their offense look without him now that he's on the DL? If you just missed that, it's breaking news within the last hour. Broken or a small crack in his talus bone in his ankle. It's a 2-week injury, 10 to 14 days on the DL. Well, 10 days on the DL, 10 to 14 for him to be back, at least at the first instinct, you know, at the first report that came from Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston. How did the Red Sox offense look without him? And finally, Aaron Boone, Alex Cora, two new managers getting their first taste of the rivalry. How do they look? What's their demeanor? How do they convey the meaning of the matchup to their team? What's the intensity level of these games? That's going to be set by the tone of this new rivalry. And this is a new rivalry now. Old logos, new rivalry. New players invested, Stanton and J.D. Martinez. Younger players that are maturing, Benintendi, Aaron Judge. Okay? This is a new feel to this rivalry. Two new managers. The tone is going to get set for the rest of the season here this week. What are they going to be like in their first taste of it as managers? So again, yeah, I don't usually think that an individual series in April means a whole lot. This one does, and it starts tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you. 6:25 tomorrow with that pregame show right here on 101.3 ESPN, your home of Red Sox baseball. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. Not a good start. Eric Flowers sending a bad message to the New York Giants. Well, it was all about Odell Beckham Jr., Eli Manning at the first day of Giants voluntary workouts. Eric Flowers, a prospective offensive line starter at right tackle, prospective starter at right tackle for the Giants, he sent a very clear message to Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur. And you know what? I'm not happy. And that is a wrong foot to get off of. That's a bad foot to start the relationship on. Look, Eric Flowers has been, I don't like to use the word bust, but pardon me because I'm too sensitive and soft. He has been a disappointment. They drafted him in the first round. He's been a disappointment. He's a better run blocker than a pass blocker. And playing at left tackle, he has been a disappointment. Left tackle, you need a great pass blocker. The Giants went out and got Nate Solder to do that. Pat Shurmur, new head coach of the Giants, calls Flowers and tells him, we are signing a new left tackle. You are going to have an opportunity to win the right tackle job. So if I'm Eric Flowers, I'm thinking to myself, wow, they thought that little of me that they had to bring somebody new in. I am going to move to right tackle, and I'm going to prove that I am every bit the player they thought they were getting in the first round. That would remotivate me. It would make me mad. It would remotivate me, and I would look inward and say, well, my career could be hanging in the balance now. They're giving me a chance to start. I will make this work at right tackle, and I will re-increase my value, and I'll hit the free agent market, and I'll get big money too. And I will prove to the Giants that they were wrong in getting Nate Solder. That would be my motivation, and that's how I would look at it. Eric Flowers chose to not show up today. And the regime of Dave Gettleman at general manager and the regime of Pat Shurmur at head coach, they have said, we have clean slates. Look, Eric Flowers has not been a great player, but he hasn't been in the news for all the wrong reasons. Okay? Other Giants have been in the news for the wrong reasons. Odell Beckham Jr. has been in the news for the wrong reasons. Eli Apple has been in the news for the wrong reasons. Eric Flowers, all of those guys were given clean slates. Eric Flowers was given a clean slate too. They were willing to judge him on what he's done, on what he does going forward, rather than what he's already done in his career, what he's accomplished or what he has lack of accomplished, for lack of a better term, the Giants were willing to say to him, look, we have brought in somebody new at left tackle, but we think that you have an opportunity to start for us at right tackle. We'll water under the bridge from everything that's happened in your career. You start clean. And he chose, he made a conscious choice to not show up. Odell Beckham Jr. wants big money. Odell Beckham Jr. is coming off massive surgery. He showed up. Eli Manning is a decade-plus veteran in the NFL, a two-time Super Bowl champion. He showed up. In fact, every player on the roster showed up except Ereck Flowers. That is not the message that Flowers should be sending to the Giants fans, to Pat Shurmur, to Dave Gettleman. They went out of their way to call him with courtesy and tell them about the signing of Solder and say, we will give you a chance to start at right tackle. You can win that job, and we will start the clean slate. And he chose to disrespect them and throw it back in their face. That is a poor decision. A poor decision by Ereck Flowers. Champlain Valley Game Night right here. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. 20 minutes away from Chris Taylor, New Plattsburgh State men's soccer coach. And you can get in as well, 802-655-6672. Real quick on Gronk. The sources are out, the reports are out that Bill Belichick chastised Gronk publicly in front of the team for using the TB12 method and using Alex Guerrero. I am of the belief that I would like everyone at the team to be under the same, not training regimen, but under the same guidance, playing by the same rules. I'd like them all to use the Patriots weight staff, but that's just how I am. But I've also never been an athlete at that level. Maybe my opinion would change if the stakes were that high. But I liked growing up when we all did the same workouts and we were all trying to accomplish the same thing and the camaraderie and the brotherhood of being in the weight room together. I liked that feeling of it. But Gronk is not being too sensitive here. For Gronk to be annoyed at what Belichick has done to him is totally justified. Number one, Gronk is too productive a player to be called out for not on-field performance. Basically what he said was Gronk was told by Belichick, hey, you're not playing that well. It's probably because of your new trainer. It wasn't about just his on-field performance. And also, if Belichick's just trying to make an example of Gronk to show that he has control of the locker room and that, wow, if he'll do this to Gronk, what will he do to me? Then that's the wrong approach also. We crushed Gronk last year. I crushed Gronk last year. He missed a lot of last season with a back injury. And he was out at WrestleMania. And he was out stopping soccer shots. And we wanted him to be more committed. Well, now, last year, he got more committed. He started working out with Guerrero. He started working out at the TB12 rehab center. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. We're mad at him when he's fun-loving and party Gronk. And we're mad at him when he's work hard, be dedicated to Gronk. And I think that's what would annoy me so much if I were Gronk. I think Belichick, as he gets older, he just wants to exhibit more and more control and be more and more of the my way or the highway guy, and that doesn't work. I mean, how many aging coaches have lost grips on their program, have fallen out of touch, haven't been able to evolve, have suffered performance on the field, have suffered other things in their career that have derailed them, from Joe Paterno to Bobby Bowden to Bob Knight? How many great coaches with a lot of wins and a lot of history and a lot of titles between them have fallen off and fallen out of favor with players as they've gotten older? And I have to imagine that those guys wanting to tighten the reins and not evolve was that part of their regression in success. And you don't want to see that happen to Belichick, but he can't be treating Gronk like that publicly. We're mad at Gronk when he played around. We're mad at Gronk when he works hard. For what reason? Because he's not working out with our guy? Doesn't seem worth it. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN. When we come back, a milestone in my life 10 years ago today. A lot of you, actually most of you, have hit this milestone too. We'll get into that next. 101.3 ESPN.
Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
All All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday. 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. Fun weekend. Went up to Canada yesterday, went to lunch, had a good time at the Café Rouge. That was great. Jess had a panini that I – or a poutine that I wish I had dabbled in. I was too busy just devouring my own panini going up to Bedford, Quebec. So that was fun. It was an interesting trip because the first place we went to ended up being like a Dairy Queen. So we ended up going a little bit nicer and went over to the Café Rouge, and that was a lot of fun. So, well, you know, I love living on a place where we can be so close to the border and go up and do different things. So that was a lot of fun. 802-655-6672 if you want to get in. I got this notification today on Facebook. 10 years ago today, I joined Facebook. 10 years ago today, I joined Facebook. And you can comment, too, on the Town Fair Tire text line on this, because I'm sure most of our listening audience is on Facebook, and some of you have probably been on Facebook longer than me. I remember I joined it senior year of high school. So 2008, senior year of high school, obviously April 9th, that's today. And the reason why I joined Facebook at the time was because of they used to have these things, well, they still do, where you join the group and I remember joining the Oswego State incoming class of 2012. And I was just like, I just want to meet people going into college. You know, I want to start to connect with people going into college. And now I look back at Facebook and I'm like, Facebook in one way has made all of our lives a lot better, probably. It allows us to keep in touch with people and keep tabs on people and has opened up professional opportunities and, you know, recommendations for how to clean your, you know, decorate your house, all kinds of things Facebook is great for. On the other hand, Facebook is no good. How much time have I wasted in the last 10 years being on Facebook? How many petty things have I got annoyed with by being on Facebook, seeing, you know, pictures of a night I wasn't invited to or whatever? I heard this, it was a comedy skit once, and this is very true. Facebook is like a community pool. Everybody's swimming in it, but nobody wants to be swimming in it. So that's what Facebook is like. But 10 years ago today, I entered Facebook, and we are now about 10, 15 minutes away from Chris Taylor joining us, the new head coach at Plattsburgh State men's soccer. I'm excited, too. Speaking of Oswego and Plattsburgh, going to go up to Plattsburgh in 2 weeks and check out Oswego baseball as they take on Coach Dory and the Cardinals. And Oswego 8-1 right now in the Suniac. So we talked about this in the huddle and gave you the note on it. Orleans Darqua is a running back that was the feature back towards the end of last season for the New York Giants. Ended the year with 750 yards and 5 touchdowns. He is on the Patriots' radar now, too. He has met with the Patriots today. And I find this to be an odd pairing. I find this to be an odd matchup, an odd meeting that was taken. And the reason why is not because I don't think Darqua was good. I do think Darqua was good. And I've always thought he was good. And I thought even for a Giant team that didn't run the ball very well, I thought Darqua was a guy who showed well. As an undrafted free agent, he had a good year last year. He's only 25, 26 years old. So I like Orleans Darqua. But he is represented by the same agency as Deion Lewis, now former Patriot. And I know because sources have told me directly, and now it's pretty out there commonplace, that Deion Lewis was frustrated in his Patriots tenure, especially last season. Frustrated last year. I think that's fair to say. Based on what I was told and what I've heard, he was frustrated last season. And we have heard about Gronk being frustrated and Brady being frustrated, so it's not surprising and atypical to hear that Deion Lewis would have been frustrated in New England either. Or also. So Orleans Darqua is represented by the same people that represent Deion Lewis. Does Lewis talk to Darqua directly and tell him what he thinks about New England? Because I can't imagine that it's 100% positive at the moment. If it was, Lewis wouldn't have left and signed with Tennessee. The people who represent Lewis know how Lewis feels about New England. Do they convey that to Darqua? I just wouldn't have expected a running back represented by the same people as Deion Lewis going to meet with the place that Deion Lewis, a running back, just left. I found that interesting. But even so, also, the Patriots have four established running backs on their roster right now as it stands, in Rex Burkhead and James White and Mike Gillisley and Jeremy Hill. So that's four running backs. And maybe Gillisley gets cut and maybe Hill doesn't make the team, whatever. But right now I got four. If I'm Orleans Darqua and I'm coming off a year where I was the feature back for a bad team, and I rushed for 750 yards on a team with a terrible offensive line, an aging quarterback, and no passing game. I'm looking at it and saying, what could I do on a good team? Could I be a lead back somewhere? I mean, if I'm going to be a bad back, or if I'm going to be on a bad team, I can be a lead back. That's not what the Patriots are offering. If I'm going to be on a good team, then imagine what I could do. Do I want to go and be one of four or five? I love what the Patriots are trying to do. I love the collective running back game, and I think it's well established that I believe that the Patriots, that NFL teams are better off when employing a diverse running attack and having multiple different runners churn up carries and chew out yards in various different ways and being kind of the Swiss Army knife running attack. I like that as a team perspective. But if I'm Darqua, why am I racing to go meet with a team that already has four other options and where a guy just left who's represented by my agency? I just find it an odd pairing. I get why the Patriots are interested because I like Darqua, but I don't know if I get why Darqua's interested because everything would tell me that that's not a great fit for him. He wants to play more, and he's going to go to a place where he's got a four- or five-person timeshare for carries and a place where Deion Lewis is, quote, you know, was frustrated and was willing to leave a Super Bowl contender. I just find it an odd pairing. Champlain Valley Game Night here at 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, last night I did watch the Masters, but I also was flipping back and forth between the Angels and the A's, and what I heard a lot of was this.
3-2 now. Swing and a miss. Down goes Olsen. And tip your cap, Shohei Ohtani. You deserve it this afternoon.
12 strikeouts for Shohei Ohtani, and it's unbelievable what we're seeing. You know this. I'm a Mariners fan. I'm not rooting for the Angels. The only Angels fan I know in this area is Eric from Milton. And if Eric from Milton's texting in, you can get in now and happily gloat 802-655-6672. I'm not rooting for the American League West teams outside of the Mariners, and I'm devastated that Ohtani didn't pick the Mariners when I thought that he was going to. I allowed myself to be happy and be excited and thinking that Shohei Ohtani was going to play for the Seattle Mariners this year. But I'm all in on rooting for this kid. I have to be all in on rooting for this kid. And you should be too if you're a fan of baseball, because what has everybody told us? Everybody has told us baseball fans that the game's too slow. The game's too boring. The game's not exciting enough. That's why we're playing lacrosse. That's why my son's playing lacrosse, because baseball, there's too much standing around. It's just not exciting enough. It doesn't do it for me. The games are too long. They're too slow. Other sports have more action. Well, baseball's not going to change. Baseball all of a sudden isn't going to become an hour long. I'm sorry, it's just not. Short of something majorly drastic like reducing the game to 7 innings, it's not going to get that much different of a game. So what does baseball need? Baseball needs attention. Baseball needs a gripping story and a guy doing something that we haven't seen in 100 years. Is that? If we want baseball to be fashionable, if we want baseball to be at the top of mind in conversation and be the thing we talk about at the water cooler, we need things that have never happened before. And it's hard. A lot of things have happened in baseball. Baseball has been played for a long time. But a guy who can throw 100 miles an hour and paint the black and hit the ball 450 feet in the span of 1 week, and nevertheless a week, in the span of 2-3 days from each other, that is amazing. And in a day and age where there's so much specialization, you don't get the opportunity to take both positions out as far as Shohei Ohtani has. Now, I was not a very good hitter, but I stopped taking meaningful at-bats in ninth grade. That was the last time I took meaningful at-bats with any kind of regularity. You just don't get the chance to do it. You just don't get the chance to do this at this level. It doesn't happen, and it is special. I watched him strike out Marcus Semien with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball on the black. I watched him throw splitter after splitter. That was unbelievable yesterday. He threw 11, got 11 outs with the splitter, the most by any pitcher in a game this season. He got 13 strikeouts with that pitch. They're 0-for-19 against him on the splitter this year. Those are video game numbers, but better. I can't do that on rookie mode in the video game. that Jess caught me announcing to myself yesterday. You should be rooting for Ohtani. If you like baseball, you want things that are different. You want things that are new. You want things that are fresh. You want things that are exciting. And Ohtani is all of that. And for people who say, oh, I can't get into it. He's not American. I need an American superstar to latch on to. Well, number one, you've already got it. Trout, Harper, Kershaw, they're all Americans. But Joel Embiid, he's not American. All I hear is what a great impact he has on the NBA and how fun he is. People love him. Trust the process. Roger Federer is not an American. Rory McIlroy is not an American. A number of Hispanic players in baseball aren't American. Ichiro wasn't American. And guys could take the league by storm. Allow Shohei Ohtani to do that also. Because, look, he may beat my team. In fact, he probably will beat my team many times over the next decade. But you should be rooting for history. You should be rooting for things that we've never seen before. And somebody doing what Ohtani is doing is just that. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Real quick, Patrick Reed won the Masters yesterday, and I found this quote to be fascinating. As much as Patrick Reed has come off as unlikable, as much as I've heard now about Patrick Reed not being a great guy, and he'd been thrown off his college team, and his college teammates were rooting for him, or rooting against him, rather, rooting for him to lose, maybe cheating in college. I mean, that he doesn't sound like a likable guy, but this quote I found very interesting and very relatable.
I always watch leaderboards, you know, no matter what event it is, what, you know, whether it's the first hole on Thursday or the last hole on Sunday, I always want to know where I stand.
That was me in a heartbeat, and that, I don't know if it's fear, but that obsession with knowing exactly where you stand, it paralyzed my career. I was always so worried about where I stood, what other people thought, looking at the scoreboard, how many pitches have I thrown, how many strikeouts did I have, what was my velocity. Those kind of things paralyzed me in my career, and he's winning majors while doing it. I found it interesting. I found it relatable. Champlain Valley Game Night continues on. When we come back, we will talk with Chris Taylor. He's a new soccer coach on the men's side over at Plattsburgh State. He was an all-Suniac player when he played for the Cardinals, and he's coming back home to take over the program. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Exciting news on the other side of the lake is Plattsburgh State has announced its newest men's soccer coach. It's Plattsburgh alumni, Chris Taylor, who graduated from Plattsburgh as an all-Suniac player back in 2011. Has previously been serving as the head coach at Clarkson University, and he will take over the program from Chris Waterbury, who steps down after 33 years on the Plattsburgh sideline. Chris Taylor is with us now on the TikTok Jewelers Guest Line. Chris, congratulations on the new job. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for the congratulations, and thanks for having me, too.
What does it mean for you to take this position over at your alma mater?
It's pretty special. You know, when I played there, that was probably the best moments of the best memories I've had playing there on a really successful team, playing for Chris Waterbury. And then I stayed on as an assistant coach for 2 years, which I enjoyed a lot. And that was something that myself and the coaches at the time knew was going to happen for a couple of years prior. But since leaving there, I left thinking, you know, I needed to get out there and go. I was very comfortable at Plattsburgh. I needed to go and be a bit uncomfortable at another program. And I wanted to be a head coach. So, but when I left in 2012, from the moment I left, I realized it's where I wanted to be. You know, I didn't really appreciate what I had at Plattsburgh until I actually left. So it's a really special moment for me, being an alum, being a big supporter of the program. My wife is an alum of the school. She played two sports there too. So for us as a family, it's a really special moment and a big opportunity.
Now, your undergraduate degree at Plattsburgh was in print journalism. You elected to go into coaching. You could have been on this side of the aisle. Why are you not one of us?
That's a good question. I think, you know, I'll be honest, school wasn't my strength at that point. I've said a few times, to have the opportunity to coach is really down to Chris Waterbury and probably my wife too, because they push me academically more than I thought I could achieve. And so, you know, I always knew I wanted to be involved in soccer. I'd grown up in England, in Liverpool. It's been my life for that whole time. And I would have been anything. I'd have been a kit man. I'd have been a trainer, whatever it was, to be near to the sport. I did journalism because I can write. I'm a pretty strong writer. I can't count too much, but I can write pretty well. So it was a good degree for me.
Chris Taylor, he's the new Plattsburgh State men's soccer coach, and he's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. What is it like taking over for a legend like Chris Waterbury?
It's hard. It's very hard. You know, I took over at Clarkson, and when I got here, the team wasn't in a great position. You know, the year before, they only won two games, but that's arguably an easier task in that, you know, there's no expectations. You take over from Chris Waterbury, who's probably one of the greatest coaches in college soccer history, especially at the Division III level, and all of a sudden you got some expectation there. But again, I've learned a lot from working with him, playing under him, and I've learned a lot from some other coaches. When I went to Vassar and worked with Andy Jennings, he opened my eyes to a whole new side of coaching. And so there's a bit of pressure taking over from Chris, but that's what I wanted. That's what I've always wanted. That's why I played the Platte, because there was pressure to win. There's pressure to be one of the best teams in the region and to be a national contender. And so that was a big draw to the job, not only the fact that I played there, but there's pressure. And taking over from Chris is certainly pressure. He's laid an unbelievable foundation, a great tradition, but that's why it's such an exciting job and opportunity.
Chris, you are 1 year older than me. I graduated college in 2012, and I played in the Suniac also. We'll get to that in a second. But I also did some junior college baseball coaching, so I think I know the answer to this question from my own perspective, but I'll ask you, what's the advantage of being a younger coach, being someone that's closer to the age range of your players? What's the advantage?
I think understanding what they're going through and understanding what maybe makes them tick. Although, you know, I've been out of college a few years now, at the age I'm at, I still feel young, I'm still energetic, and I've still got an unbelievable passion for the job. You know, I still sit here and say, I can't believe this is a job. This is fantastic. this is amazing. It's so much fun. I'm obsessed with the sport. I love the sport. If I could still be playing, I would be. And so coaching's the next best thing. So I think I'm able to transmit that passion and energy to the players. It's a cool experience to be a head coach at this age. And when I got to Clarkson, I was very young. But it's been a cool experience to do it as a young coach. But I think just understanding what the players are going through. And I also think being open to new ideas, open to change, being flexible, because as a young coach, you're still forming who you are and what you want to be. And so I'm still trying to learn pretty much every day. So I think that's the other advantage, is you're not really set in your ways just yet.
Men's basketball team had a great year at Plattsburgh. Women's hockey team had another great year. They've won 4 of 5 national championships at Division III. Men's hockey, always a threat on the national stage. Men's soccer, women's soccer, men's lacrosse. This is a good athletic department. How has it changed from now since the time you played?
That's a good question. I think there's certainly more stronger programs than the way before. You know, obviously the success of the men's lacrosse team last year, and you know, women's hockey's always been strong. My wife played women's hockey at Plattsburgh, so I know that program pretty well. And the soccer program was always strong too. I think that's one of the things that I mentioned when I interviewed there, to be honest, was that's a big recruiting pull, that there's not just one good team or two good teams. This is a good athletic department. You'll come here to be a good men's soccer player, but you're also going to be around other really, really good athletes, successful programs. So, you know, since I've left, the facilities have improved a lot in terms of the field, the locker rooms, stuff like that. And I really like where the place has gone under Mike Howard as the AD. I really enjoy talking to him and listening to his plans and ideas. He wants to keep pushing the school on and push the department on to new heights. And, you know, there's no reason why Plattsburgh can't be a really competitive team in every sport. It's a great school. It's got a really nice location, and the facilities are great, and there's some absolutely top-draw coaches there. You think about the hockey coaches and the success they've had, Coach Kale with the men's basketball program. I mean, you've got legends in their own right there, so it's a really exciting program to be a part of.
Chris Taylor, new Plattsburgh State men's soccer coach, with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. You were an all-conference performer in the Suniac when you played. I never hit all-conference, but I played baseball at Oswego. My real question is, are you going to be nice to the Lakers when you play them next year?
Well, actually, the Lakers beat me a couple of times towards the end of my career, so there's no, I've got no love lost for them. You know, the Suniac right now is crazy. It's the most competitive it's ever been. When I played, we felt we were a pretty dominant team. Each year there'd be a new contender with us, and we didn't win the Suniac every year, but you know, we were in the NCAA tournament the last 2 years. We won the postseason championship, we won the regular season championship while I was there, but it's a totally different animal now. I look around the league, and I know a lot of the coaches really well, and you talked about myself being young. You look around the league with the other coaches, there's a lot of youth on their side too, and some really accomplished coaches. So you know, you had three teams in the NCAA tournament last year. I'm really excited to compete. I'm a little bit nervous going into a conference like this. It's going to be difficult, but it's going to be fun too, because that's why I got into this. So I really hope we beat Oswego, but I also hope we beat everyone else too.
Well, we'll get you out of here on this. I had somebody come up to me. I had two people come up to me recently and say, Brady, you need to talk more soccer. One guy wants Premier League updates, and somebody else wants me to only talk about the Chicago Fire of the MLS. But I'm going to ask you this question. Who the heck is Zlatan, and why do I not know who he is? And he's like 36 years old.
Well, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he's been one of the best players in the world for a number of years. He's a Swedish guy, and he may be 36, but he's probably in better shape than a lot of other players out there right now, and he's ready to hopefully light up the MLS a little bit. He scored an amazing couple of goals on his debut last week, and I think even people who aren't into soccer are going to enjoy watching him. You know, he's a big guy at 6'5", but he's got unbelievable technique and skill, and he's actually coming up to Montreal to play the Montreal Impact May 21st, so I'll be going up to watch him, and I think it's going to be a sold-out stadium.
There was our Zlatan update, and there's our soccer talk for our domestic professional soccer talk for the week, everybody. So now you all can be happy. Chris Taylor, new Plattsburgh State men's soccer coach. We appreciate the time, the perspective, and we wish you the best of luck coming back to your alma mater in 2018.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and hopefully we can speak a little bit more as the team continues to have success, building on what Coach Walsbury's done there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Chris Taylor. There he goes with us on Champlain Valley Game Night. And not easy. Not easy to take over for somebody who's been in town for 33 years. You look at Tom Curl, Bob Emery, and Chris Waterbury. You talk about a trio of serious coaching prowess in the North Country. So good for Chris Taylor on the new gig, good for the Cardinals on their new coach as well, and a good hire by Mike Howard. So that'll do it for us today. Remember, coming up tomorrow in the huddle, we'll give away that last pair of Red Sox tickets, last pairs, 420 and 520. We'll also have trivia tomorrow night at the Burger Bar in Colchester. Look forward to seeing all of you then. Back on the air tomorrow at 4 for the huddle, 6 for Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.